direction. Okay. Thomas Paine. This is a very flattering picture of him, but it does emphasize that, you know, he wasn't in fact a very kind, a very selfless person, almost to a fault. Okay. He tried to do good things. That was his whole reason for being, really. But he was definitely far from perfect. Without him, there would probably be no America or France, at least not as we know them, okay? And that is not an exaggeration. Let's check this out. But why not a founding father? If that is true, why isn't he considered a founding father of either America or France, unless you happen to be a grad student of history, and then you would say, oh, yeah, he is one. We'll find out. First of all, there's a little background. Thomas Paine started off, he was just Paine, without the E. And then for some reason, he got here and added the E. Maybe he didn't like to be known as Paine. I don't know. He just didn't like that. He was T. Paine, and then he became not a rapper, but he was a girdle maker and a tax collector. He made stays. He made corsets for women. Girdle, not girl, but girdle maker. Okay. I'm not meaning to be disrespectful of Thomas Paine. In fact, I probably am. I think he's awesome. But I did want to emphasize the contrast between what he used to do before he became an American. He was an Englishman, and he made these things, although probably not as nice. Because he wasn't very good at it. He was an awful corset maker. And he also collected taxes. I think he was better at tax collection, although I don't think he enjoyed it. So that's what he was. And there's different theories, but the tax collector part is partially probably what got him more into politics, but nothing compared to when he came to the United States. In fact, he started to get involved in politics when he met this man. He was walking around London or whatever, and somehow got involved with some people who included this person, and he liked Paine. He saw something in Paine. Not that kind of Paine. But I don't know. There's rumors. But okay, so Franklin gave Paine a letter. Okay, of recommendation. That's the letter. And that's really an important letter because he used that when he went to Philadelphia. Nobody knew who he was. And because he had a letter from Franklin, everybody listened to him, at least initially, or for a long time until they stopped listening to him. And then that would really ignite this little letter. You know, led to revolution or successful revolution from Philly to France. I mean, literally, in a big way. That's the Masonic eye. Franklin really knew what he was talking about when he basically made Paine his protege and met him, you know, and just thought he definitely... There's something about this guy, even though he's just a corset maker or a tax collector, he could tell he was much more than that. Because that's what he became. I mean, that's why I did the girdle picture, because it's such a contrast to what he actually became. He became really, truly the original world revolutionary. I mean, he makes Che look quaint, really, in his achievements. I mean... If it wasn't for Paine, I hope after you hear what I have to say, you will realize just how central he was. If it wasn't for this guy, there wouldn't be a United States of America. By the way, he named the United States of America, okay? That's his phrase. They were going to call it Colombia, and then Colombia already named itself, and then they said, well, we'll keep the generic name that Payne came up with, even though by that time nobody liked Payne. Okay, so here we go. So he was a prophet, he was a poet, a pamphleteer, a propagandist, a participatory democracy. I really like alliteration, if you haven't noticed. And then he spread democracy. You know, Che was really into spreading socialism, and he went all over, and he's much more, and he had a lot, he was good with words too, if you haven't read a lot of his little sayings. But Payne was, no one really knows like how he was like I've heard him called a political science savant, because he never references other political scientists or philosophers. And he doesn't have a very great illustrious education, but he was brilliant. His best writings, but brilliant in his communication especially. And this is one of the many famous quotes: "The world is my country. My religion is to do good." Okay. So as Franklin lay dying, only landowners could vote in the United States. And one of these men called Franklin, the first to lay his head in the lap of French harlotry and prostrate the Christianity and honor of his country to the deism and democracies of Paris. Now, he was the first, but if he was the first, Payne was the second, and on purpose. In other words, Franklin would be happy to say that Payne did what he did. He had so much passion. He was unrivaled. The only one to rival his passion for democracy, but even not really even rival it, was this guy, another Tom, Thomas Jefferson. And also another deist. But we're going to get more into deism in a second. Franklin was a deist, Thomas Paine a deist, and this guy here a deist, everybody a deist. But what is deism? A lot of people say that that's what got Tom Paine into Thomas Paine, not Tom Paine, because that, if you ever hear people referring to him as Tom Paine, that was used as a slur to make him seem like just a commoner. He's just Tom. But no, he always referred to himself as Thomas. But he was a deist, and so were so many other people, educated people at the time. So that's not really what got him into trouble, just being a deist, because most people didn't even know what deism was. Problem was is that he told them what it meant. So that's what got him in trouble. But we'll get back to that. So this is the question: would Payne's dedication to deism be his downfall, or his radical dedication to democracy, or what does deism have to do with democracy? I'm going to get to that right now. And in answering these questions, that will answer why we don't include him as a founding father. So what is deism? It's a belief that God is creation. One way of putting it: God is creation, and we should use reason to understand and honor creation, not organized religion. So, deists believed in a freedom of belief, but that no belief system should control the state. And that probably sounds familiar to everyone. It became a tenet of our country. And he wasn't the only one who thought this. So it was a strong belief of the deists. Other than belief in keeping a democratic republic or in republican democracy, whichever adjective you prefer, putting it that way, emphasis. So that doesn't make deism sound so bad, does it? No, deism sounds actually pretty cool. What do I know? Well, I know that many of the founding fathers were deists, as I said. You had Franklin, you had Jefferson, I already mentioned, but you also had James Madison, and you had George Washington himself was a deist. By the way, they were latter-day deists as well. probably the most famous of them all was Lincoln. And he actually wrote something similar to what got Paine in so much trouble, but his friend said, oh, that's cool, and threw it in the fire. Because he didn't think that would help his political aspirations, as it did not help Paine. Okay, so if all of these famous founding fathers were also deists, then why isn't Thomas Paine also included among them as a founding father? Well, he wasn't much of a politician. He was great with words, though. He's a great speechwriter, but great speechwriters don't always make great politicians. So if it wasn't deism itself that led to his fall from founding fatherdom, then why was he vilified all over all the other deist founding fathers? And the interesting thing is that all these other deist founding fathers were themselves deified. I mean, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, I mean, they're practically American gods, okay? But they were deists. And yet, just like John Lennon, who says, and no religion too, people like him still, okay? But Thomas Paine said it, and everybody hated him. But there's more to the story. Okay, so Thomas Paine's greatest strength was his greatest personal weakness, at least that's my argument. His ability and democratic dedication to communicate his ideas to everyone. That to everyone is what got him in trouble, okay? So basically, according to Thomas Paine himself, to bring reason to your ears, and in a language as plain as ABC, hold up truth to your eyes. Okay, which sounds great today, but back then it got you into big trouble. Okay, if you've read any Thomas Jefferson, it's very highfalutin, or a lot of the other educated people of the time, whereas Thomas Paine prided himself in writing in very plain speech, and that's dangerous. So this made him both one of the most powerful and therefore also one of the most dangerous men alive at the time. So he could mobilize millions, hundreds of thousands of people to fight for themselves. These are Minutemen. These are the words that you may be familiar with. These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will, in this crisis, shrink from the service of their country. But he that stands by it now deserves the love and thanks of man and woman. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. And he wrote a lot more that was also stirring. And it before these words were published, the majority of Americans, at least the historical scholarship indicates, were not all that into giving up their lives for independence. They were okay with Britain until Thomas Paine convinced them otherwise. Okay, so for Paine, democracy requires freedom of thought, a revolution of thought, not just political freedom, but thought freedom, extending from government to religion. So he was very much an Enlightenment person. He really, you know, wanted to just not hold back, and he extended from politics to religion to science, everything. So he was convinced that organized religion cannot play a neutral role in any free. We already said that, and that's not controversial. But Paine had the audacity to actually say this to everyone, okay? Which has incredible implications about democracy and especially direct democracy. Okay, so he wanted to include the so-called rabble. He believed he was a humanist in the truest sense, not just in the salon sense. Oh, say, well, we're all free, it's all equality and egalitarian, you know, all that stuff. No, he really meant it. So including the rabble, the elite wanted to, these people depicted in the picture who the elite wanted to keep under control, in part through organized religion. Okay, so this is a quote from Paine. When it shall be said, in any country in the world, my poor are happy, Neither ignorance nor distress is to be found among them. My jails are empty of prisoners, my streets of beggars. The aged are not in want. When these things can be said, there may be that country, there may that country boast its constitution and its government. And he was, yeah. These are his words, and he was one of the first to say them in a language that everyone could understand. Now, everyone could understand this language, but they couldn't read it. Okay, the vast majority of people were illiterate. So you would go to a place like this, a public house, and then somebody would say, who can read? And then one guy would raise his hand, and he would be the designated reader, and then the vast majority of people would listen. And they would even buy it, you know, because Paine was not a rich man. He could have been. But he was so dedicated to his ideas spreading that he would just let it be sold for very little, and people would buy it. And he was by far the greatest best-selling author of his time, second only to the Bible. He sold hundreds of thousands of copies of his works, and people couldn't read it, but they heard it. And you know what they did after they heard it?
Bought it.
Yeah, and they wanted to learn to read. So he also got people to learn to read. He increased literacy. So these guys are American aristocrats. So to maintain their hold on power, the elite had to find a way to undermine Paine's power, to mobilize the masses for democracy, voting without private property. That's what democracy really amounted to, but they didn't want that. They could have killed him, and a lot of people wanted him dead. And yeah, that's an actual gravestone. Happy gravestone. After he served his purpose mobilizing the masses to fight for the elite king, or fight the elite against the king, but they didn't have to. They didn't have to kill him because all they had to do was let the French do it for them. But would they, or would the French actually do it? See, that's where it gets complicated. And that's how he becomes a world revolutionary. And I'm going to leave out a ton, I've already left out a ton, but I'm going to leave out a whole section of revolutionary activity that took place in England. Paine was this close to leading a revolution in England to make England a republic, okay? But the British were smarter than the French by far in that regard, although it depends on how you look at it. The main thing is that the British, he went to England. And he didn't go there to change England into a republic. He went there to build bridges, but we'll get to that in a second, because he was an engineer as well. So which brings us to Paine's role as one of the founding fathers of the first French Republic. And I'm not exaggerating here. He literally was instrumental to the making of the French Republic, because it was originally supposed to be a constitutional monarchy, and one of the leaders of that was Lafayette, okay, which you've heard of in American history. But here we go. How did this come about and then lead to putting Paine in line for the guillotine? Well, I'll tell you. To make a long story short, he went back to England, and this is actually the bridge that he designed. It was just a demo, and he hoped that it would catch on. But it didn't catch on, even though it was the first of its kind, a single-span iron bridge, and it's still in use today. Okay, so he went there and said, let's do this, and then nobody wanted to make them. So then the French Revolution started, and this guy named Burke just thought it was awful, and then Paine said, you're wrong, and that resulted in the Rights of Man. See, often Paine was very passionate about reason, and when somebody said something, he didn't just say, you're wrong, he wrote a book. So he wrote this book called The Rights of Man, which you may have heard of before, and it made him even more popular than he was after writing Common Sense. He was already a world celebrity, at least in the Western world from common sense and being so important for the American Revolution. But when he wrote this, and it was really common sense for a European audience, okay? He wrote that, and he freaked out the British aristocracy, because then suddenly, not so much the first version, I mean, there was two parts to it. The second part was the most radical part, and it basically called for modern democracy. But even more modern than modern democracy, because it was more direct than even ours is. Okay. So Paine shifted back into high revel. He didn't intend to. He was like, I'm going to retire and become a civil engineer. But he got all fired up again because of the French Revolution, and especially because Burke, the anti-Paine, saying all these stupid things. Although not entirely stupid, he was very intelligent, and he actually, I'm talking about Burke, he predicted that France would turn into a military dictatorship. He was right in the short term, and Paine was right in the long term, okay, about what would happen with democracy. So Paine shifted back, and with the beginnings of the French Revolution, this was how he was depicted in Britain as this kind of buffoon. That it was basically, they couldn't argue against his reason, because he is an incredibly great arguer for democracy against kings. So all they could do is basically character assassinate. So The Rights of Man, or Tommy Paine, the little American tailor, taking measure of the crown for a new pair of revolution breeches. So he, once he wrote The Rights of Man, it just caught wildfire in Britain, okay? People were putting, I'm talking about the people who didn't have property, they wanted to vote, okay? So they were putting pictures of him up on the wall in their homes, and they had all these meetings, and all these revolutionary societies started. They were really afraid. And we all have heard of McCarthyism. Well, there's a guy related to William Penn, I think, the establisher of Pennsylvania. Penn was in the government of England at the time, and it was basically Pennism instead of McCarthyism, a sort of British reign of terror, which no one ever hears about, that was instigated because they were afraid of revolution because of the Rights of Man inspiring Britain to, or a lot of people to want to bring down the aristocracy of Britain. But Rights of Man was written so mainly for England. It didn't really have a big impact in France, okay? So what then directly made Paine one of the most fundamental founding fathers of the French Republic? It looked like he was going to make it all happen in England, and England was going to be a republic. Didn't happen there. In fact, they hounded him out, and they hounded him right into France. So his writings this is what did it. It was the Republican Proclamation. He got there, and I'm really oversimplifying, but he was there, and while there, in fact, when he got there, he was hounded out of England, and when he got off the boat in France, they were just saying, vive la Paine, and they just loved him already, because they already knew that he was the hero of the American Revolution. And common sense was translated into French. So people knew about him already, and they loved him so much that they made him a French citizen. He became a representative in the first government, and he was put on the council, I can't remember the name of it, to write the very constitution of the French Republic. But that's not what makes him really a main founder of it. This is what does it. I mentioned that, what's his name, Lafayette, who was royal, who was a nobleman, but highly respected, was the leader of the movement to make France constitutional monarchy. Okay, so the king was going to stay, but he was going to give up his power, or a lot of it. That was happening, and that seemed reasonable and so forth. But Payne thought, well, wait a minute here. Everybody loves America, and they all think it's great what I did there. So he had this friend who, by the way, couldn't speak any French. So he was a French citizen and everything, and actually a representative in their elected body, but he couldn't speak French. So he had his friend translate this thing that he wrote out on one piece of paper, and then in one night they plastered it all over, I think it was in this 1791, all over Paris. And this is what it said. The proclamation stated that the king is, quote, a grievous burden pressing hard on the whole nation. He holds no longer any authority. We owe him no longer obedience. And that was that. The next day, you know, people forgot about, they essentially just forgot about the intermediary stage of a constitutional monarchy. And so it was an establishment. I mean, it was no less than a manifesto for the establishment of a republican government in France. So they were going to go. Payne said, let's go directly from an absolute monarchy right to a republic. And that's a big jump. So Payne and this guy, can anybody pronounce that? Yeah, I can't say it, but he's really important too. He acted alone. Yeah, right. He's a translator, but translators are important too. So they acted alone in making and spreading this proclamation to make France a republic. Okay, so Payne's audacity to leap from absolute monarchy to democratic republic over constitutional monarchy would have very, very profound consequences, as we all know. It would lead Payne to being declared a French citizen in August of 1792 and elected to the first national convention to establish a republican government in France. Pretty cool. He could go, he went from extreme adoration. He couldn't speak any French, but he walked around with a translator and everybody loved him, to being imprisoned and threatened with the guillotine in December 1793, little more than a year later. Only Payne could pull this off because he was great with words, but he was just stupid when it came to politics. I mean, he didn't know how to keep his mouth shut. So he was no French aristocrat, so he didn't have to worry about that. But he was an unquestioned friend, and he was an unquestioned friend of the French people. There's no question about that. But he did something. He didn't think the king should be put to death. And if there's one thing about Payne, he stuck to his principles, even if it meant that he was, going to die. In other words, he was very much against capital punishment. In fact, most people don't know this, but Robespierre was also very much against capital punishment until he wasn't, because he was not as stupid as Payne in that regard. By the way, so here's the guy he stood up for. He didn't know him, but he believed that, no man should be executed. So he said publicly, that is, in France, in 1793, that he shouldn't die. But before he was arrested for being so stupid, for being against the death penalty for absolute monarchs in Republican France, Payne somehow managed to complete and smuggle out of France his next great work, The Age of Reason. Now, he was when he wrote this. This is what's so amazing about this guy. One thing that's amazing about him is that, all his friends were being murdered, okay, and he sat down and wrote this. Okay, and it's called The Age of Reason, and his friends are being murdered around him. Doesn't sound like a very reasonable time, but it's an investigation of true and fabulous theology. But he wrote it because he saw what was happening being driven by militant atheism. And so, ironically, because Americans called him an atheist after he wrote this, ironically, he wrote it to combat militant... He wasn't so much against atheism, but he was against militant atheism. And he was definitely a believer in God, but his God was essentially the universe. Okay, so Paine dedicated his Age of Reason to his fellow American citizens, but was inspired by the need he felt to try to convince his fellow French citizens that cool-headed reason should be the order of the day, not militant atheism. And he directed it against those who claimed a mandate from God to rule. So you had this guy, and you had, this is a picture of the French clergy and nobility standing on top of everybody else in France. Okay, so, and they claimed the right to do this by referring to, you know, God and so forth. So he saw atheism or militant atheism leading France away from democracy, and most people would agree with that. This, you know, extremist ideology. This is a picture, however, that was another political cartoon from Britain, and they're basically predicting, you know, this is what it's all going to lead to. That is the rights of man. But again, the rights of man was written after things got going in France. Nevertheless, though, his proclamation was what led to the steamroller to republicanism in France. So basically, here it says the Age of Reason or the world turned topsy-turvy in Tom Paine's works. So again, the British were very successful in their propaganda in making Paine, certainly in England, out to be not such a great guy because they had France to refer to. They could just say, see what's happening there, see how awful Paine's, see how bad democracy is, you know? I mean, they were basically saying that, and it wasn't that Paine wasn't disagreeing with him, but it's very, he was destroyed. In terms of, not entirely, by what was going on around him, because he saw that it could have been much different. So at first back home, meanwhile back in the United States, Thomas Paine, one of the founding fathers of Common Sense, a lot of Americans read Age of Reason. Okay, I'll wrap it up. It was a bestseller despite its rejection of all organized religion. So it was a bestseller, by the way. I mean, it was a rejection of all organized religion in the United States, and it was a bestseller. So it went through, wasted no time railing against, you know, as atheism, and I will wrap this up really quick. It said this, I believe in God, hope for happiness beyond this life. So this is all nice stuff, but it also said, that all national institutions of churches appear to be no other than human inventions set up to terrify and enslave mankind and monopolize power and profit. So, you know, Marx is derivative. Okay, so anyway, then finally, he also referred to Christianity as Christian mythology. Okay, in other words, the Age of Reason is potentially pretty much a recipe for political suicide, at least in America, and the perfect ammunition for character assassination. And that didn't come out right, but, you know, that's organized religion equals morality. If you do that, then that makes Paine a deeply evil man, okay? Because he did not, not only did he not subscribe to organized religion, but he rejected it. And basically, in France, he was put in prison. Not because of the Age of Reason, but because of not he defended Louis. But why was he left there? And I'm going to try and like go really fast and basically say that he was left in prison from his perspective because he wrote the Age of Reason and was such a radical Democrat that Washington, who was president at the time, could have gotten him out of prison, okay? Because America was an ally of France at the time, but they left him there. And he got very sick. And if he hadn't gotten sick, let's jump ahead. That's his. They were, by the way, close friends up until this point. And it's complicated. You can ask me later about the details. But basically, he got sick in prison when he was in Luxembourg prison. And on the day that he was to be executed in 1794, he was to be executed 4 days or 3 days before the end of the Terror. And they put a mark on his door, but his door was open because he was sick and they were letting the air through his, and then they closed the door and you couldn't see the mark. So that's why he didn't die. Basically, he was very lucky, but he wasn't, because if he had died then, he was lucky. But he also was unlucky, because he got mad. He wasn't happy. He was mad. He was mad. This is the explanation. That's a particular door of a particular prison from the 17th century. And then he was not happy. He was furious because he was left in prison to die by this man. And the thing is that he wasn't, he was, you know, it was the greatest remedy for, he said, this is Paine, the greatest remedy for anger is delay. But he didn't do that. You know when you write an email and you're angry and you're supposed to wait? Well, he didn't do that. He didn't wait. He wrote an open letter, I'll jump ahead. He wrote an open letter. Now this is, he did this too. He denied the very divinity of Christ. He also said Christ was awesome, but he said he wasn't divine. But what could possibly be less forgivable than that? He publicly criticized, excoriated George Washington. While he was still president, he was the only one to do that. He did a public letter. He didn't just send a letter to George Washington. He did a public letter, like a mass email to every single American. And he said, Paine rejected any credit, he rejected any credit Washington, you know, for winning the war. This is what he said. Had it not been for the aid received from France in men, money, and ships, your cold and unmilitary conduct would have lost America. Which is probably true, but don't say it, okay? And then he also excoriated John Adams, and he basically said that all Federalists were disguised traitors to democracy. And to top it all off, he condemned Mr. Washington for being a traitor while he was still president, but a traitor to their former friendship, okay? And so he was sad and mad at the same time. And basically, I'm summing it up. Basically, he put the final nail in the coffin of Paine's founding fatherdom, a coffin built by those who feared the radical democratic ideas Paine espoused in Rights of Man out of the blasphemy argued by Age of Reason. I know it's an overextended metaphor, but basically that's what did him in and why we don't consider him, a founding father. John Adams admitted that the sword of Washington would have been raised in vain if it weren't for the words of Thomas Paine. Nevertheless, he later called common sense a crapulous mass. Okay? A piece of shit. Okay? That's what he called it. So that's, you know, and that's unfortunately what a lot of people came to think of Paine. At least the educated and so forth, but the common people still loved him. And this is basically what I will say, is that no founding father other than George Washington had been more popular than Thomas Paine before he went to France. If he had wanted to be president, he would have beat anyone else, maybe even George Washington, in a landslide if the vote were not limited to landowners. So the paradox of Paine is that he preached reason but was driven by passion. Poor champion of democracy, Thomas Paine, just as his bones have never been found, and that's a long story, may his ideas never rest in peace. Thank you.